Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
There aren't many other TV shows. Like I say, if you take an attitude that it's a jigsaw puzzle, no one buys a jigsaw puzzle because you like the picture at the end. You buy a jigsaw puzzle because you want the act of putting the puzzle together.
I like that.
Do you like that, don't you?
Yeah.
Right? And my point is, but there are some people who buy a picture. They buy a picture. They don't buy the jigsaw puzzle version of it because they want the picture. I believe that Westworld...
Had you heard that from somewhere else
before? No, I made that up. That's all mine. And that's going in the best of, and I'm claiming it.
Oh, so much in that 30 seconds. So much. This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, and I'm Zeph. And of course, the pause means it's just me down here in the new basement studio by the lake. And if it's just me, then most likely this is a highlight show. And as those 30 seconds might have told you, well, this is probably the 2017 Best of Special. Now, why does that clip get in, I hear you ask? Well, that metaphor from last December's review of HBO series Westworld shows me at my brightest. And while I know that statement might meet some resistance from many of you, well, the case for the prosecution need call only one witness, my absentee partner, whose ascent is profound. Here, listen again.
I like that.
Now, if you're new to the Atlantic Voice and you're using this special as your, how should I put it, gateway drug into our world, well, don't be fooled. These specials are a little different from our regular outputs.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake. I was alone the last time.
I know.
And can I say something? I want to say two things about the last show. On the last show, I attempted, because I didn't have anything else and you were away traveling, I attempted to get a jump on our Trump predictions.
Right.
And if any of you actually listened to the show, and I want to circle back to that point, even on my own, I still found a way to be behind.
Well, so I didn't, you know, I know what you were doing is a scorekeeping on our predictions. It's yes. Obviously very early. I have only gotten through the first 20 minutes or so of it, so I didn't know what the final score is,
but I'm already behind.
Okay.
And the whole point of the show was, if I can total up these predictions with you not there, yeah, I might have a better chance of winning.
Yeah.
Well, as I found out, I actually don't know what I'm talking about when I'm looking into the future.
All right.
But can I say something about that? Was really, really difficult sitting on your own. And I suddenly had, and I think I said this in the show, I suddenly have great respect for all those old school radio guys. And I'm thinking of people like, not that I listen to these people, but people like Rush Limbaugh, mm-hmm, who don't have guests and they're able to talk for half an hour before even taking a phone call.
Well, in the podcasting world, there's some podcasts that do, like Mark Maron's podcast is pretty much solo. He has guests, but most of the time he's doing a lot of solo. And I do find it interesting. I end up not liking those as much because I think when you have one person's mind, the things start to repeat themselves quite a bit.
Very,
you know,
true.
Like the theme sort of happened there. I don't know if that happened with you. Of course, it was only one episode. But you mentioned it was difficult. But what's different about what you did than when you do those clips? Like when you do our greatest hits, you always have a different voice on for that. So there's something you're doing technique-wise.
Well, let me tell you what's different when I do the greatest hits. Because the greatest hits, you know, I make clips. I know what clips we're going to play. Whereas last week or last episode, I was just playing the old show back and turning the sound up and down and sort of winging it and hoping for the best. When I put together the greatest hit show or the best of show, I script all the links. So I've written it out.
Right.
So I've written out any jokes or punchlines or to try and set up the link properly, because I think it can be quite hard.
Yeah.
The best of show, if you're just listening to it.
Oh, yeah, no, you wouldn't want to wing that into...
No, but what I mean is you always hope that the clip makes sense on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of what I've learned over the years is how you set something like that up. And then people listen. Like if you go, and we were talking about dogs. And as you can tell, Eric's very confused by the size of a Labrador's tail. And then the clip will, you know, so it sets up the clip. Right. So that ends up being more scripted. And as much as I attempt to read from a script and make it sound natural, you cannot ever, it's always forced. You know, like you pause.
It doesn't sound bad, it just sounds different. It sounds like a different type of...
Yeah, and you pause to try and make it sound conversational. But at the end of the day, you've written on a bit of paper, pause here to sound more conversational, and it's not. Whereas when you're just talking, You know, we talk differently than we read.
Well, and then the person across the table fills in the blanks and with the pauses and things like that. But it was notable that it was different. And I was talking to Improvise Explosive Dave last night, in fact. And
I forgot his name.
You did stumble over it a little bit, but I don't know if he had listened to it yet. So he can...
Well, hopefully if you listen to this show
knowing
first,
that it's unscripted kind of thing.
Yeah. And I will say this. The ratings on that show last week from a couple of weeks ago is huge. And I have
Is that right? Oh, well, this Trump stuff you mentioned,
And I think what I'm going to do in order to boost our ratings is just put Trump in any title. So even when we do, like, for example, the Summer Movie Preview, it will be Summer Movie Preview Part 1, Year of Trump. And I just think that if you put anything on the web that says Trump in it, the number of hits and views... I don't know. It's fascinating.
It's interesting. Maybe it's like a bunch of Russian bots, like, come over anything Trump, they come over there. Like, have there been things on the blog, like comments on the blog post for
No, people don't want to do it.
Well, you know, you don't know when you're suddenly going to get a bunch of people in some cave in Russia making comments on it. So
yeah, but we played it again. If you haven't listened yet, we do play it right up the middle politically, so you're not going to be offended either way. You might be offended at the fact that I know so little on my own.
It's becoming increasingly difficult to stay non-partial on this podcast.
Hard, isn't it? But anyway, so if in this show we're not going to talk about Trump, but if you do see it in the title, it's only because we're trolling for hits. It's that simple.
So there you have it, a quick peek behind the curtain how we go about our business here at the Atlantic Voice. Now, a couple of reasons for that clip. Longtime listeners know that my partner and I, we do compete with each other over the course of the year, seeing who's more prescient, more predictive. Listen to any of our summer movie previews to figure out how that all works. Anyway, more to the point, I seem to perennially come in second out of a pair. Anyway, you'd also have heard us discuss one of our fans. No, not the president, but IED Dave. Now, our fans are very important to us. You are very important to us. We don't mention all of you, and there are a good many of you who listen, and I'll come back to that later in the show. But we do like to mention those of you that either communicate with us or perform some sort of service, even if we can't put that service into words.
And not so that even the ones I wanted to see. I like, you know, there's definitely were only very
that,
few.
That being said, so a moment's during the Total Up show, I am going to give a shout out to Richard and read what he said, having seen the movie. It would have been easier to have had him on, but you know something? We're not in the star making business if the stars are not ours.
You know, we've given.
So I'm going to give him a mug.
Well, we've given names to people. We have Mike the Detective. We have Improvised Explosive Dave, who deals with
Richard the Lobby Lurker. Because he's always in the lobby of the cinema. Oh,
that's awfully long.
Oh, okay. Boy, he's got
Does
a long
Does he go
name.
By Richard or does he go by Rich?
Richard.
He goes by Richard.
Yeah. Movie Richard. Boom, done. As opposed to Little Richard, who was a singer.
Movie Richard.
Movie Richard. So, Movie Richard, we're going to be shouting you out. Thank you anyway. There is an Atlantic Voice mug on its way to you.
Do you still have a cache of those?
I still have those. So we need to
update our logo anyway.
We need to get... I've got it somewhere on my computer. We need to send one to Detective Mike and Christian and probably anyone else who's constantly talking. So, because I've got like a box of them. So, so if you are one of those people, contact us. And if you're not and you want a mug, contact us. It'll be $12.99.
Christian's moving to be. He's going to be moving very close to the Lakeside Studios.
So oh, good.
Pop in anytime.
There you go.
We could do it like a Mr. Rogers. We could just have a knock on the door while we're in the middle of things. We do have a door in the room, mind you. It doesn't open, but it's. Yeah.
All right, so let's get to it.
Yeah.
So anyway, on with the show, our FA Cup final special. You sent me an article the other week, courtesy of our New Hampshire correspondent.
Yep.
He sent us an article.
He's got a new title. Oh.
What, the title that we're giving him or in real life?
In real life, but it's perfect for the podcast.
Okay.
It's like... Ah, oh, shoot. I apologize. It's not chief scientist. It's
lead scientist.
It's more like his new thing is he gets almost like freelance science, you know? And so I was like, oh, you're going to be the science
expert, consultant, troubleshooter, science agent.
It was an unusual, like not horribly unusual, but just unusual enough. And just said, I will find out next
Lord
time.
Lord scientist.
Apologies to scientist of the pod. We'll get that.
We'll give you your promotion later.
Yeah.
So anyway, I titled it.
So why May is the cruelest month, by the way? Is that a phrase that I'm
May is the cruelest month is a famous quote. I don't know from what. Probably Wordsworth or something like that.
It would have been worth looking that up. As long as you're going to throw this out as the famous thing.
I'm not going to spend time on my phone desperately trying to look up May is the cruelest month on Quoterama. Can you have your computer open. Can you actually look that up now?
Yeah, May. See, this is where we need our guests, our
research Google assistant. Home. Oh, Google Home. Yeah.
We could say, what is it?
Google what?
Cruelest month? Cruelest.
Cruelest. May is the cruelest month. It's either a line from Shakespeare or from a play, or it's like a poem, like Keats or something like that.
Put it this way, Google is not...
I'm the product of a classical education. I should know this stuff, but because I didn't pay that much attention in school, I vaguely know it, but I can't reference it anyhow.
T.S. Eliot.
There you go, T.S. Eliot.
Yeah, except that he said April is the cruelest month.
Oh, it is? I always thought it was May. Oh my gosh, well, that's what I'm saying. That's what makes this show even better, because we're not just ripping off T.S. Eliot. We have... In that modern way where you take something famous and you twist it around for your own needs, May is the cruelest month.
Yeah, that's good. Well, that makes a derivative. Otherwise,
there you go.
Eliot, April is the cruelest month, breeding lilacs out of the dead land, mixing memory and desire, stirring dull roots with spring rain.
Oh, see? That's poetry, that is.
So,
didn't he also do Macavity the Cat? That's T.S. Eliot.
I don't know.
Again,
I don't think we'd go that far. I think we're already 10 minutes in, and
no, we don't have to
talk about any dead people yet.
Okay,
although he's dead. He's talking about a dead person, but he didn't die in May.
He didn't die
in May. If he did, he would have written that poem differently.
So anyway, all these people died in May, and as they were passing, like, someone died. Like, I think the first one for me that died was Sir Roger Moore, and I'm like, oh, Roger Moore, James Bond, and we will come to Roger Moore. Mm-hmm. But then in the days that followed, other people passed away, and for some reason, I'm like, oh, wow, he's notable. And then I noticed two patterns emerge. And this is sort of the what's that phrase where you take a little bit of dramatic license?
Embellish?
No, but
zephify it.
Yeah, okay. There's a word for you. That I suddenly found that I could link all these people who died.
Yeah.
And now, as a badge of honor, I'm going to be able to link these people roughly. And I think you will obviously
the gauntlet has been thrown.
Yes, and you will challenge the veracity of my link, and I'm sure the listeners at home, if they really think I'm stretching it, they'll push for the off button.
The other thing I was going to comment on was...
Can I shout out one of our fans first?
People always say... Well, just...
Okay.
And we'll go fan and say... Okay. People always say, you know, people die in threes.
Yes.
Well, this seemed like it came... In fact, actually, if I count the numbers right here...
About 14, yeah.
I think we have three threes.
Okay.
So,
you have to make those threes.
Of course,
that's
frightening everybody.
Yeah, so you have to make those threes.
Eventually, we're going to get to talk about nine dead people.
Fan of the show, Keith, I got some feedback, not from him, but from his wife. Fan of the show, Keith. His wife says to me, oh, Keith, listen to your movie show.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, great. And fan of the show, Keith, said, well, you guys must have put a lot to his wife. They must have put a lot of work into it. This show was really well rehearsed. And I'm like, oh, that's great. But
that's funny.
Well, fan of the show, Keith, also said, yeah, but it was too long and I couldn't listen past an hour.
Well,
so,
and considering all told, it was 2.5 with the two parts.
Yeah, so, you know, whatever. it's not our fault if you don't have an attention span. The show is too long. The show is too long. We hear that all the time. It is an ongoing discussion. Now listen, never mind the length, feel the quality to twist around the name of an old British TV show. But look, this is a podcast. Just press stop. Come back to it later. I mean, let me ask you, do people not listen to side one of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band because they don't have time to play side two? Did I just compare the Atlantic Voice podcast to Sgt. Pepper's? Anyway, listen to this year's spring special about first albums for more on that. Anyway, in this next clip, we discuss one of our fans, CSI Dan. Well, about becoming a fan. Soccer, especially English soccer, is getting very popular here in the US, so much so that there are a whole load of people who are now looking to pick a team. So on the nature of becoming a fan, this discussion. Obviously, the rest of the world, if you're a listener, you already know what we're talking about. But the sort of stereotype is an American's going to be sitting there going, these guys are talking soccer. But now, I met someone for the first time yesterday. You know, just one of those casual moments. Someone introduces someone. Yes, what's your team?
Yeah.
And I think the words out of my mouth was, yeah, I'm an Arsenal fan, so I'm not watching a lot of football at the moment. Yeah. I think that was how I actually responded to. But it was interesting how that was a conversation with an American chap,
yep,
not much younger than I. That was the conversation.
What was his team?
West Ham.
See, that's, you know, that takes some.
I kind of respected that because it'd be easy to bandwagon jump on one of the big ones. Right. But this guy, for whatever, I didn't ask him why. I just wanted to move on from the conversation.
So this all ties into CSI Dan. I don't know if I told you this ahead of time. No. But so CSI Dan has been, CSI Dan's girlfriend, who, because I've been authorized the way I have for other people, we could give her a name, but she's.
No, that's
we fine. I know CSI Dan through his girlfriend.
She's probably on the
She's an Arsenal fan.
She is, yes.
Now, I don't know the whole history of how she got to be an Arsenal fan. That's not the most important part. But CSI Dan has been exploring his options in being a soccer fan and has a friend who is trying to convince him to be a Man United fan. And I was trying to explain that this was not an appropriate decision to be made. He already has a girlfriend
who's an Arsenal fan.
He already has a girlfriend who's an Arsenal fan. Why not get that route? I mean, I'm okay with that. You know, not you know being a Chelsea fan or options, but being a Man United fan just isn't really an appropriate decision for anybody.
Bandwagon jumping.
Yeah.
Well, but to be fair,
what's weird about it is that they used to be the ultimate like expat. Nobody followed them. You know, like nobody. The joke was that they didn't really have any fans that were in England. It was just fans.
There's no fans in Manchester. There used to be the argument that there were more Manchester United fans in London. What did we call them when I was a kid? They were either Cockney Manx or Cockney Reds, and the notion was they were more. If Manchester United came to play, you know, home, as we say, then the away section wouldn't be full of people from Manchester. It would be full of people from down the street, right.
So, but ever since Ferguson has left, they've, you know, been on rough and choppy waters. Yes. So now people get fooled. It's the same thing with a bunch of people adopting Liverpool. And the Liverpool for a bunch of years now has been pretty bad, but they were the juggernaut. They were the Yankees of the league for so long, maybe not in terms of fan base, but they were in the terms of domination of the league. So people kind of forget, like this set of Americans, it's very interesting because they can just lend their allegiance to a team.
Well, I'm going to criticize CSI Dan for looking at his options. You don't look at my girlfriend's an Arsenal fan. That's my team. Yeah. I don't remember how I do remember why I ended up being an Arsenal fan. It was the first game I was taken to. It was the closest big team to me. That's how it was.
Yeah.
And while there have been many times in the last many decades that I have tried to find reasons to divorce my team, it don't work that way.
Right.
That's
why, like,
you're married for life.
That's why it's important when somebody's doing this formative effort to make sure, like,
CSI Dan, I'm picking Arsenal because it's my girlfriend's team. You don't sit around and go, look, can I make a value judgment?
So obviously, every time I talk to people about, you know, what their team is, they all pick their team, you know, in the past 5 years or something, maybe longer. I mean, I followed Chelsea for longer than that myself. But when I always mention that my podcast buddy, Zef, you know, is an Arsenal fan, I feel like it necessary to explain that you're like from childhood, like you went to games and you didn't, you know, it's not like a U.S. person picking a team.
Yeah, I'm not Johnny come lately.
In fact, you didn't even pick it at all. It was given to you and bestowed upon you essentially. Maybe somebody didn't like affirmatively, consciously think, I'm going to make him a fan of this, but based on where you went and what you did, that became your team.
Because as an adult, I'd be following someone else. I'm telling you that right now.
But so he's picking that. And the other thing, he really was hoping there would be some team with a quality U.S. player. And I was like, we're not really in that situation.
It is interesting.
There have been points in time where you could have, you know, could have followed Fulham because they had Dempsey, or you could have, you know, I guess for a little while there, Claudio Reyna played at Man City briefly, I think.
And we are going to get we are going to get to the Arsenal story to do with in a moment. But it's interesting too, though. Premier League teams are now very aware of this opening market to them.
Oh yeah,
and so that's why you have a lot of Americans trying to own teams, and they're trying to market here, and they all come here on tour. And obviously, the NBC contract is huge. And so it's funneled all kinds of money back into the team. So there is this real notion that it's this sort of, you know, sort of, I'm trying to think of the word, sort of fertile ground for the likes of CSI Dan, who they hope will
up
their cable package or maybe go and buy a shirt I'll do whatever I need to. So CSI Dan, from a selfish perspective, you need to become an Arsenal fan and you need to go to their website right now and buy about $400 in gear. Hopefully we'll put that back into the team.
Counterpoint
somehow
to being an Arsenal fan. You know, we already had the counterpoint of Piers Morgan being a fan, but now he's sort of disappeared from the US airways. So depressing. Baron Trump.
This one's even better.
Donald Trump's son, youngest son, who is, I don't know how old he is.
14, 10, 10? 12. No, is he like, oh, no. Okay, right. He's in there. He's little.
He was spotted. There's a picture of him playing on the White House lawn in a full Arsenal kit.
Full gear. Socks. I'm going to give him his due. Because I, and again, anyone who knows, I think we covered this in my Christmas show. I'm wearing a suit today, as you just said. And this is one of the few times when I'm wearing, like, one get-up, which is what a suit is. But even me as a longtime Arsenal fan, I'd go out of the house with either the shirt on or the shorts or a top, but never all at the same time.
Is full kit wanker like one of these things that was invented in the US, or is that an old term?
I don't know. I can't honestly.
There's like websites that are dedicated to the pictures of like full kit wankers, but I don't know if that's something somebody in Brooklyn invented on their podcast or if it's something that goes back.
I hope you're not going to call the president's son that right now, because then you and I are probably going to have some people bursting through the door, and me being from another country, then I'm being sent home for starters.
If you're a kid, technically, you can't be a full kit wanker.
No, you're a kid, because you've been given it, and that's what you do with it.
It's like a costume as a kid.
But he was wearing it all at the East Egg Roll.
Yeah.
At least he was spotted. I don't think he wore it at the East Egg Roll, but he was spotted playing in the White House garden in his full Arsenal kit.
Right.
And so I'm like, wow, you know, we now have Piers Morgan. I guess it's better. I don't know. Is it better or worse for the team? You know, you can make a case that... I'm trying to think of... Arsenal had a famous... There used to be the story back in the early 2000s that apparently Osama bin Laden was an Arsenal fan. Now, I don't know. And again, I don't know how true all these things are, but thanks to the internet. So, yeah, like I say. But to be fair with you, Baron Trump, Osama bin Laden, Piers Morgan, as an Arsenal fan, I've got more pressing concerns right now about my fandom than those comedians. So anyway, there you go.
Yeah, a couple of quick Chelsea notes.
I think it's fair to say that Piers Morgan, Osama bin Laden, and pretty much everyone in the Trump administration, in fact, everyone in government, I would say, are probably not fans of the Atlantic Voice podcast. Well, I think we can be sure that Osama bin Laden isn't. Anyway, moving on with a mention of another of our fans, Spike Guest Cameron. In this discussion of the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series in dramatic fashion, me missing the good bits, and Eric's hidden tendency to poke the snake with a proverbial stick.
Because I do find it's quite compelling in the playoffs. I tend to watch...
Compelling, albeit long.
Yes. And I dipped in and out of the World Series, basically watching 4 innings here, 5 innings there. I did watch Game 7, and I think it was something like 6-3 at the bottom of the 7th, or going into the 8th. And I'm like, okay.
It's top of the 7th.
Yeah. Top of the 7th, and I'm like, yeah, this is it. The Cubs are going to win. And then decided to turn it off. And then I missed the whole, they were going to win, then it rained, then they might not win, then they did win. And so I felt like the
part that made it classic.
Yes, I missed all of that.
Well, just real quickly, what I was going to say is right after they won, they ran a Budweiser ad, it looked like from late 70s, early 80s, with Harry Carey in the stands.
Oh, really?
So that was kind of, it's amazing to me, actually, as I think about it, that presumably those old advertisements that had celebrity endorsers.
Yeah.
They still have the rights. I mean, people love nostalgia now. I'm surprised you don't see a bunch of ads that are like Miller Lite tastes great, less filling ads, or, well, you won't see the O.J. Simpson running through the airport for Hertz cars ads. But
I did see that on the O.J. film. It was on the – they did show it.
But they wouldn't use that as an ad. Yeah, but the people running it as an ad, people might like that, you know, like – particularly the beers, because just think about how everybody's run away from the American beers. A bunch of classic ads of classic sports people endorsing.
So what do you mean they don't have? They do have the rights. If I'm Budweiser or whoever, own it. It's my advert.
Presumably. Right? I mean, unless they like, I don't know.
And Harry Carey's dead, so it's not like you got to pay him a royalty.
Well, presumably you have to pay his estate. Assuming he was entitled to something. But anyway, I'm surprised people don't know more of it. Maybe they will. Maybe they will.
A friend of the show, Cameron, Spike Guest Cameron, he was actually outside Wrigley on Addison Field, on Addison Road,
really?
After Game 7.
I noticed
7.
Something from him.
He lives
Is
in
he
Texas.
Like a classic Cubs
Yeah, I mean, he
fan?
Lived in Cubs for a while. He lived in Chicago for about 7 or 8 years. So I wouldn't say he's a classic Cubs fan, but obviously he lived about 4 blocks from Wrigley. and so had an affinity for the Cubs. He was actually outside Wrigley Field when Sammy Sosa hit the ball out when he got the home run record. I think this was before he was uncovered as a cheat and a steroid abuser. That's Sammy Sosa, not my guest, Cameron.
Yeah.
But Cameron flew up from Texas just to be outside. And I will actually post his YouTube video. He took a YouTube video of the moment when everyone on the street starts cheering and that famous lit sign changes from Cubs leading to Cubs win World Series or Cubs become World Champion. Yeah. I will link that up there. But he went up there. He said he just wanted to be part of it.
Yeah, first of all, it was a great game. I mean, like, you know, people are now saying, I mean, is it one of the greatest games of all time? I don't know enough about this. So much of a game being great is your personal investment as well. I mean,
yes.
If you were to say, it's probably had more of an impression on a wider group of people than a lot of other games because everybody was sort of had to your feeling point, good for them.
I would say your personal emotional investment added to the historical significance of the moment. Because, I mean, you know, there are multiple...
Like X times Y squared equals...
Yeah, because there are multiple... There are thousands of sports events televised across the world every weekend, and I'm sure some of them are the most exciting game ever. But if it's between, you know, a team 10th in the table and the team 15th.
Having home runs and having, those could happen anytime.
If a tree falls in the forest, does anybody hear it?
But what you mentioned there about Cameron is, I don't think he's quite fitting the mark for what I'm going to describe here, is my concern about all this, right? I'm trying to lead the backlash to everybody feels good. Everybody feels great about the Cubs and they won after all these years, but... I don't know if everybody remembers the Red Sox before they started winning World Series, and they were lovable losers, and everybody, all the long-suffering fans, then they won, and they kind of became insufferable ever since.
Well,
individually, not necessarily individually, but suddenly everybody had been a fan forever. Oh, they'd always been a fan, and you know they joke about the Red Sox fans who wear the pink hats and stuff. That suddenly, once they won. Oh, I was, you know, I used to be a fan of theirs back when they were horrible. No, it's great, and I really love them, and I'm going to go up to Fenway once every year and catch a game, etc. And the Cubs are at serious risk of that.
I called Spike Guest Cameron, and I did say, you know, I hope the Cubs fans are not going to become insufferable like the Red Sox fans. He actually accurately made the point that, to be fair, Red Sox fans were insufferable before they lost.
I don't know. They're guys, probably more so. That's true.
He is a Spike Guest. He's not going to take a positive.
We have a common acquaintance that I won't even mention the name of, but he's been mistaken for you on occasion.
Oh, really?
He's an age-old Cubs fan.
Okay.
From the area there. Okay. And so grew up and, you know, family thing and all that. But I was telling him a little bit about this, and he's like, oh, the haters are coming out, blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, but you know what it's going to be? Everybody would be lovable.
Define hater.
Haters against the Cubs, saying,
yeah, I'm that's one. Cubs there you go. That's me. Because you know something? I actually wanted them to lose. Because then we are robbed in sports of having a perennial loser.
I know. It's like it's a better story almost as a loser. And so here's what really it led to, because without me even leading into it, at one point, he basically said, you know, part of me is going to miss being, you know, the martyred, you know, the lovable losers. Exactly. And I said, do you see what you've done? This is exactly it. Now we're supposed to feel bad because you don't feel bad anymore. Like, you know, you're a martyr for not being a martyr anymore. Oh, it's just, you know, just not the same as it used to be. So like when their own fans are doing that and saying, oh, you know, now we're going to be so... You know, now we're a winner, and that doesn't feel the same as I grew up with. Well, what do you want, folks? You know, like,
true. No, I just didn't. I just, like, if someone's a loser, I wanted to be able to keep calling them a loser.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing worse than being a bully without someone to bully. That's how I.
Should we take this into a discussion of Arsenal, or are we going to skip over
that? Yeah, let's skip over that. Yeah. I'm horrible, aren't I? A full-on hater. Though why should shoulder the rap when Eric himself clearly said that he wanted, quote, to lead the backlash, unquote? Really, it's a surprise that this show has any fans at all. What were those attitudes? Now, we'll come back to our fans. But while we're talking about ourselves, well, it can't be a surprise that I'm also the type of person that would opt out of Christmas.
snowman mug.
Yep.
So let's not have any illusions. While we're not sort of, you know, this is Christmas. So we keep saying that, like somehow it's going to make the show even better.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I think I've arranged to get you more gifts than you have. So I'll definitely probably go first.
Well, I think because, you know, because obviously I'm a bit of a minge bag and I actually don't like Christmas.
Right.
I don't mind not. I have two things about Christmas, and I know we covered, I think it was on last year's show where we did the best of Christmas, and there was one segment where we talked about the best gifts we received and the worst gifts we received. So this is not a new thing. I don't like getting gifts that I don't really want. And I'm a very specific type of person. This
is perfect event for you then.
I want things. And what I mean by that is, if I'm looking for a new Blu-ray player, that's what I want. So if someone gives me a automatic garage opener, I'm like, yeah, but I don't want that. I don't need that. I only shop, only want what I need.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, I'm more than happy not to. Just give me some cash.
But sometimes you don't know what you need. But I will say, see, when you say you want a Blu-ray player, you probably don't care what Blu-ray player it is. You just want a Blu-ray player.
No, I do. I'm very specific about what I need.
Oh, really?
So what I'm saying is, if you were to shop...
See, but at that point, there's no point. So that's why one of the things I was going to talk about there, and we're already up to it, is when it comes to technology gifts, from my perspective, I don't generally push for those because I end up being... It's too specific what I want.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm to say to somebody, oh, I'd like to get a smartwatch. Well, And this is a particular one, and I figured out which one I want, and so
I don't want the
idea of having. Yeah. I don't mind if somebody gets it for me, but it's not going to be very surprising if I'm literally like, oh, I would like this particular item in this configuration and this model number from this manufacturer. Then it's just an item that somebody has bought for me.
I mean, if you show up at my house with a case of beer, I'm like, that's great.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, as I say, the other side is like clothes, like, and that's because you have to like live with the technology and it's fitting a particular purpose.
But I'm
a pair of pants is a pair of pants.
I'm a specific person, and I think Christmas, unfortunately, and to the point, you sort of touched the knot there. Christmas is about unwrapping things. And, oh, wow, isn't that great?
Yeah.
And I do find it a bit weird when you're like, someone tells you what they want and then you go and get it for them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, here's $100. Go and get it yourself. What do I need to go to the store for? Why do I need to muck about with ordering it online?
And therein and is Zeph's approach to the holidays.
Christmas is a lot of hassle. It's a lot of unnecessary hassle. And I'm like, you know.
You better just cancel it.
Well, you can't cancel Christmas, but you can opt out. And I've been trying for many years as an adult to opt out.
Yeah.
So, I guess, as it is, I've only got a list of about 5 or 6 gifts.
All right, so I'm going to go first. Anyway,
all right, let's do it.
No surprise, then, that in our Christmas special this year, which involved Eric and I giving each other imaginary gifts from mail-order Christmas catalogs, that my partner had a longer list for me than I had for him. Though, to be fair, anyone who actually listened to part 2 of our Christmas show would know that I gave him a whole town. And if that makes no sense to you, well, you need to go back and listen to that special. You can find it on the blog. Anyway, in this next clip from the Christmas show, Eric questions the veracity of gifts, specifically internationally themed gifts sourced from a domestic catalog, if that makes sense. We give another fan a shout out, even if it's a fan who in reality has merely been forced to listen. How should we say a collateral fan?
You know, when people have some of these possessions, these exotic possessions, or even the sweater, you know, that you a legitimate Irish sweater, usually it signified you went out there and got it. You know, you had some connection to these things.
Yep,
or
I'm with
but
you.
Now, if National Geographic is selling all these things and you can just get them, you're not really an adventurer if you just buy things from a catalog.
But
I feel like it's a little bit of a... And what happens if everybody can get these... I'm going to give you your gift because it's a good launching point for this. It is a Tibetan chime of compassion, which I just thought was a suiting thing for you because I think you need a little chime of compassion.
Oh, because I need compassion or yes. I need compassion to be towards other people? Because I know I can be a bit abrasive.
It's the latter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the inscribed with one of the most significant mantras in Buddhism... Om Mani Padme Hum, which I'm sure is not the right way to pronounce it.
It's actually Om Padme Hum.
Yeah, exactly. This chime is handcrafted by Tibetan refugees in northern India. Buddhists believe that, let's come back to that in a second, believe that saying this mantra invokes the blessings of Buddha of compassion.
Dong.
So you know,
that's what it is.
It gets you more compassionate because you're playing it. And it basically is like a little bell, like a cymbal hanging from a cord with a little stick that you tap it and go ting, I'm sure. I don't, you know. It says, cast from a combination of metals, the hand-tuned chime produces a clear tone, brass stand with wooden bass and striker. It's 8.5 inches high. So small, you know.
Yeah, it's not
it's
big.
A National Geographic exclusive, $60.
Oh, that's a lot. I mean, I appreciate your generosity, but yep. That's a lot of money. And frankly, what price compassion?
But the handcrafted by Tibetan refugees. Yeah. Refugees, not just Tibetans, but rather folks who are been left out of their displaced. Homes are going building this chime for Americans.
That's why
it's to buy the chime of compassion.
Okay, so this is where we come.
I mean, maybe if it turns out that $60 is $55 of benefits to them.
Yeah,
but somehow I don't believe that that's the case.
And this is where the rubber meets the road with the National Geographic catalog. And I don't have a pop at National Geographic. We'll tweet them and give them some love.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something slightly. Scam is the wrong word.
No, that's what I mean. It's a little
with this.
Like, do I feel good about buying this? Do I not feel good? And plus, it triggers what I was talking about, which is this should be something that you had to travel to a far flung. You should have to earn this a little bit.
Yes, I've got one there.
Not just buying it from the catalog and get shipped to you in 2 days by UPS.
This is the interesting thing about the National Geographic catalog, and I actually had that.
Oh, I just noticed the title says "Gifts That Give Back."
Really? Yeah. Oh, so I guess that means... Well, read... Well, could you read some of the other
ones? This page also has a Bulgarian hand-painted casserole dish.
Oh, who's built it? Bulgarian refugees?
Artisans use needles and fingertips to create patterns. So this one doesn't say, like, it may not be made by Bulgarians.
See, this is an interesting thing.
A silk sari hat and scarf. Nepal's Kathmandu Valley takes scraps of silk left over from production of saris and weave them into a uniquely textured yarn. And then Black Forest mini cuckoo clocks.
Yeah, and you know something?
It's the Black Forest of Germany need help.
And that's what I'm about to say.
Every one of these products is almost the same price.
If you live there in the Black Forest, you're probably not hurting. You're not hurting at the same level as the Tibetan refugee country is, the guys are, where you're already a refugee from a country that frankly doesn't have a lot of infrastructure to start off with, and you're now a refugee from that country. Whereas the Black Forest dudes, everyone comparatively... probably quite well off there. You're driving at least the Volkswagen. So, you know, life's
the
quite
cuckoo
good.
The cuckoo clocks take two AA batteries too, so I'm going to imagine this is not a traditional construction.
No, it's not. Here's the interesting thing about the National Geographic catalog. And we talked, I mean, I said, yeah, I was looking for a tweed cap. I would wear a Donegal sweater. But if I'm the sort of person who's going to pay that kind of money, I'd like to think that I probably wouldn't be buying it from National Geographic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I buy expensive shoes. Mm. I like buying good old-fashioned English leather shoes that I will keep forever, take them down to the cobblers, he can replace the soles, all that type of thing. I will buy them from the places. What I will not do is find them in the National Geographic, get a taste of walking through the fields of Ireland with these shoes. I wouldn't buy them from there.
Right.
And so that's the interesting thing about it. The catalog just seems oddly placed within the marketplace.
Yeah.
I have a friend, a fan of the show, Amy. I'm going to give her a shout out. She works with me. That's why she's a fan of the show. She has no choice but to sort of listen. she has on her desk one of those little Japanese sand pits with a little plastic rake. And you can...
Oh, yeah.
You rake the sand and it's supposed
it's
to
be a Zen garden.
I would assume that the Tibetan symbol of compassion or whatever it's called, it's supposed to have the same effect.
Yeah, although as I think about it, see a sand the garden, that's a quiet endeavor. If basically you had this in your office and people were hearing you repeatedly going ting,
oh, it would drive other people bananas,
or they would know. Listen, you'd have a bad day. You could just count up the number of times the bell goes off. Zeph really appears to need some compassion. He's like,
we need to get one. Well, how much was it again?
$69.
Ooh, that's a bit steep, considering that the bell...
Oh, you can use it instead of the bell. Yeah.
But you know something? I got a bell from eBay for $3.50. Yeah. So at the end of the day, if all you're doing is making a noise, we're going with a bell. Well, thank you.
We might feel more compassion.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, so shout out to Collateral Fan Amy, or in reality, Press Ganged Fan Amy, and our very own bell that we use to separate topics or clips, such as on this show. All right, we've been going a while on the 2017 Best Of Show, so let's stop for a little refreshment. I don't know, maybe a nice cup of tea. But before that, let's hear about another fan, Detective Mike, in this discussion about the smartphone traffic app, Waze.
figure out all kinds of ways around it.
While I don't use Waze, I'm defending Waze.
Yeah. It's up to he. He was perfectly within his rights to try to mess with it. They're perfectly within their rights to say, we don't buy into it.
Yeah, so it's a wash. Yeah.
I have heard a story. I'm not sure if it's really true. I'll have to ask Mike the detective whether...
Here you go. We have an assignment, Detective Mike.
Yeah. Police officers putting fake police... Like so you could put out... If you're driving along, it'll say, oh, there's a police car here. This wouldn't really be Detective Mike's area, but like traffic police, if they basically wanted to slow it down. Although I imagine a rank and file police officer probably doesn't really, their goal isn't to like do the traffic. They'd rather catch you on tickets or something like that, but they could put fake alerts.
Yeah,
there's a police officer at this intersection.
I'm a big law enforcement guy, but at the end of the day, when he comes in off shift, no one's going, hey, traffic ran smoothly. Well done, get a promotion. No, it's, did you get your requisite number of tickets today?
Right.
So at the end of the day, the police officer, actually, he needs people speeding in order to help his own career. Just having everyone move around in an orderly fashion, that may well be a job well done, but it is hindering his own career prospects.
Yeah, Detective Mike, or is it Mike the Detective? I think it was Detective
Mike. I
think
it'd be both. I think it's up to him to decide.
He's official investigator of the show.
That's how I want to think of it.
Like I said, it's not his. He doesn't do traffic work, but maybe he knows what's going on there.
Yeah, it's a bit. It's kind of ironic that finally at this stage of my life, I have a friend who is a policeman, and he doesn't seem to be able to help me with the things that affect my normal life.
Did you see the story about the guy who got busted with the dummy in the HOV lanes a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
So we know the detective who busted that person.
Oh, yeah. Well, good. And I'm glad, because I get mad at other people who get away with it.
They propped a dummy. Apparently, the dummy didn't have any legs, but it was like just a torso. They never do. In the
I've heard stories of people dressing up volleyballs and all kinds of stuff to do the HR.
Wilson?
Yeah, Wilson, yes.
Slapping, you know, broad strokes about different parts of the world. Chinese this and Indian that. I don't mean it that way at all. But like I said, I've always been of the understanding that it was green tea or jasmine in the Chinese restaurant, but maybe that.
I think it's this, because this is about the right color. The other thing about it, like I hadn't realized beforehand, how long do you steep your teas?
You know, it depends. I will digress for a minute. If I get a big tea bag, because I'm a bit of a minge bag, I'll try and get a couple of cups out of it.
I'm going to come back around to that,
I will dunk it in for a couple of seconds until it sort of goes dark. Then I will take the bag out, put the bag in another cup and go, ooh, I'm having that later. Other people who've either shared space with me, either in an office space or in a home, are like, that's disgusting, throw that out. And I'm like, no way, you can get another cup out of that.
Yeah.
So how long do I dunk it for? I don't like my tea. I'll say this. I don't like my tea too strong.
Right.
If I can put milk in it and it still tastes harsh, I'm like, ooh, that's too strong for me.
The things I was reading, I mean, people who really get into it are like doing slightly different temperature water and things like I'm basically doing all but off it
has
the boil water.
But it has to have boiled, though. I see people...
Really?
Oh, I've seen...
I mean, really. You know, technically, that does not really matter. I mean, people talk about off the boil... You boil it and you take it. But what difference would it make? Water.
No. If you
it's not like you've changed the properties of the water.
If you gave... Well, this shows you. I don't like tea that's been made in the microwave. Mm-hmm. And if you gave me tea where you just used hot water out of the tap, I wouldn't drink that. I have to have seen the kettle come to a boil.
Interesting.
Steam cup to
it's
me.
It's your concern about sanitariness. Isn't that a big thing in Britain is people have like disgusting teapots because they don't clean them often enough?
No, you get all that stuff inside.
Yeah.
And the spoon that I always use, the same spoon to take the tea bag out.
Yeah.
If you don't wash that for like a week, that silver spoon looks completely brown. It's coated. And it was an old wives' tale that, all that stuff that you see on your spoon or in your cup, that ends up lying in your stomach, which may be the case.
I think it goes through. But so I was going
to
say.
No, the water has to be close to the
all board. These things, when I was reading about the experts, it's like a 2 or 3 minute steep. You know, it's not supposed to be my father. He will like leave the thing in there for like 10 minutes and it's horrible. But
my bag goes in the cup for about 4 seconds.
Yeah.
I can't wait 2 or 3 minutes for a cup of tea. You're joking. I've already waited for the thing to boil.
One of the things that you just mentioned was the reuse of it. That was another thing I was surprised about. All the tea people are like, oh, yeah. I mean, like loose leaf tea. So we're having loose leaf tea here, by the way, not in a bag. One of the big differences is. The pieces, like when tea bags have like the smallest pieces, they go through all these like screens and like the nicest loose leaf tea is the biggest chunks of tea, and then down to like it's like powder becomes the Lipton bags basically. At least if it has a decent sized leaf, they specifically say make it three more times, basically. They say, like, it's going to have to steep a little longer, but...
I'm going to use that cut of the show, and every time in my home when someone says, I can't believe you're getting another thing out of that, I'm going to play that.
Now, the bags...
This is what the Xbox says.
Because if the bags are full of just, like, a dust, I'm not sure it works exactly the same way, but it definitely is encouraging. It's a gross difference from, like, coffee. You get it over those grounds, you chuck them.
Oh, yeah.
They have no use after that other than maybe compost.
Out of a regular English breakfast tea bag, my goal is to get three, and in some circumstances, and depending on the brand, four mugs of tea out of that thing. Now, I don't do it for any kind of flavor reason. Yeah. I just do it because it'll make my $3.50 go further on that box of tea.
It's like you're, you still have a little string of the World War II experience of Britain.
Well, I got that from my grandmother.
Are you also growing carrots in your front yard?
No.
Eric has become an expert on tea. That was his resolution for the show last year. Every year we do resolutions. I only do them for the show. I don't do them otherwise. This year, his resolution is smoking meats. Let me say that again. My partner's resolution is to smoke meats. You can listen in next January and hear us eat. Oh, what fun. Anyway, back to this show. A shout out to another one of our fans, Architect Rob, who did communicate with us that he was upset that Eric had criticized his handwriting. He seemed less upset that Eric had actually stolen his Cure album from him. And both of them were less upset than I was about teenagers infringing on my own fandom. All in this cut from part two of our spring special, First Albums.
There's more than I thought we were going to talk about Big Audio Dynamite.
Yeah,
for sure.
You see? Well, because when you said we're running one album less, I'm like, I thought we better stretch it out.
Oh, no, we got other things to do at the end. And we got, so my next one, I'm going to call it my first Boomerang album.
Ooh. Ooh, no, Dick, I'm curious.
So it's also a couple of other firsts, which I kind of want to – it's The Cure, Head on the Door. So the album came out in 85. It has a couple of other elements being a first. One is that it was sort of a first guilty pleasure because it was one that I would listen to regularly myself on drives. It is also, I think, the first album – there were two albums like this. I think this was the first of the two where I essentially – borrowed it from a friend and never gave it back.
Yeah.
So if you look, I have...
So it's the first album you stole.
Yeah, it's not really stole because I didn't intend to steal it. Because I'm pretty sure what happened is I was going... Because I used to drive back and forth between Virginia and New York. And it was a long drive. And I needed more music. And I think I asked to borrow this stuff. And so if you look at it, it's in a case where the label's not even... Like, it's the official tape. Right? But it doesn't have the paper wrapper. And it has this handwriting version on the... think that's Rob's.
Okay.
So Rob the Architect, we'll call him Architect of the Pod, even though he hasn't nominated himself for that. Rob, my apologies. I think 25 years later, I still have your Head on the Door tape. I think it's his. If it's not, it sure looks like his handwriting. At first, I thought maybe I got it from a girlfriend, because I have this other one. I have Nina Cherry, Raw Like Sushi.
That was my other album.
I would listen to these things repeatedly on the drive. You know, and just, you know, you could sing along with it while you were going, driving up and down the East Coast and hopefully not stuck in traffic. Singing in, when you're stuck in traffic is no fun. Anyway, so that's that. But the real reason that it's called the Boomerang album.
Okay, yeah, you go get
because,
that.
Because it was an album that when it came out in 85, dismissed. I mean, like, I would have never thought about it as something I was interested in because my interest at the time and who was listening to this type of music. Whereas after... Oh, I guess 6 years after that, 5-6 years after that, now I'm like, this is a really interesting album. I think it's, you know, a case of where I was at the point in time. Because when it came out, this would have fit into alternative radio in the States. Yep. And it is poppy. We're going to play some. I should play some.
Yeah, let's play some songs. I'm not a Cure expert, but I know quite a few songs. So in order to identify the album, you better play me something that I might recognize. Okay, yeah, all
right. So this is In Between Days, right?
In Between Days.
So it's very poppy, but it's alternative poppy. And when it came out, the people who liked it would have been the more, especially on Long Island, you know, would have been the more alternative set. And I'm blanking out on the name of the radio station, LIR? Boy, I can't remember. But it was the alternative radio station of Long Island. It would have been on that. And it just would have been the kind of thing where I was busy listening to Rush and moving on to the Grateful Dead and maybe listening to some metal and things like that, so that I wasn't too into this sort of thing. And maybe didn't hang with the crowd that was more alternative like this. But then ultimately, years later, when I would listen to it because somebody else had a copy that I ended up borrowing, I was like, well, this is good stuff, man. I mean, this is really just good stuff.
It's definitely an album that's aged well, isn't it? I mean, what else is what can you name some? Don't play them.
Can you name
some of the other songs from this album?
Well, you know, this Baby Screams is one that's a big deal. Night Like This, I don't know if you'll recognize you'll recognize the songs.
It's Close, it's Close to Me on this album. Like that song. That's just and I remember that's got the famous, I think the video is of a piano going off a cliff or something. Yeah. Beach or something like that.
That's right. I think I've noted here that was a hit of theirs. And this one is like a little fluffy, but
yeah. It's interesting because I always think of The Cure as a new wave band, and I just quickly Wikipedia'd them. They're from Crawley, south of London, probably Crystal Palace fans. And according to Wikipedia, their genres are gothic rock, post-punk,
alternative. I was going to ask you, where is that, by the way? Crawley West.
Crawley's just south of London.
Okay.
I think. Near Gatwick Airport.
My version said Crawley, West Sussex.
I don't know. I get my Crawleys and Croydons mixed up. So maybe they're not.
Where's
maybe
West
they're
Sussex?
Not.
South of something.
Southwest of London, yeah. Right. See, it's Sussex South.
Is that what?
Yes, like Essex. Essex is east.
Wessex.
Middlesex.
Norsex. Is there a Norsex?
Yeah. It's shocking how little I know about British history. And I had a classical education.
Been a while. You've been here since 85, as we just found out. Exactly. You know.
It's interesting. Yeah, gothic rock. I don't know what that means, but I never think of The Cure as gothic rock other than he wore makeup. I don't know quite what
it was. It was a little guy. And I, you know, they go back in this 85, and we tend to think of this.
This song is not gothic.
No.
Wearing a long trench coat, having eye black under your eye, and singing this seems strangely at odds with itself. Because this is a very cheery song.
Yeah, well, so this was definitely like they moved towards a more poppy type of thing. I realized I hadn't pulled any of my notes out, and I don't remember if I said anything interesting about it in here. But I had it listed as being post-punk, new wave kind of thing. But it came out, you know, they started roughly the same time as U2. And so, while obviously they don't have anything close to as big an arc, and, you know, they kind of grew up out of the same thing. Well, it's not, these guys aren't playing stadiums, you know, they might play arenas, but, you know, basketball arenas, but
okay. I mean, but there's some longevity to them. I mean, they're still doing things.
And
that's a lot to be said. There's not many other bands, you know. I'm trying to think of bands from way back then who have not gone away and come back. I'm talking about bands who have consistently been putting out music. You've got these guys. You've got U2. I'm going to shout out someone like Duran Duran, who still turn out an album every two or three years.
Yeah.
Apparently, Depeche Mode keep churning albums out. I saw Duran Duran live once. Even though I don't do live music, best live show I ever saw. It was
really,
yeah. It's funny. I went on the Ordinary Day tour. I'm going to digress now to my quick Duran Duran story.
Meanwhile, I'm just going to pop another. That's more guitar-y, just so people know what I'm doing here.
And I'm at this Duran Duran concert in the 90s. I'm a man who's entering indeterminate middle age, and I'm surrounded by 17-year-olds for whom Ordinary Day was like the first hit that they were exposed to. And I remember being really, really angry that someone else was trying to take my band. I'm like, no, Duran Duran, that's my generation.
Yeah.
And
it's a variation on the U2 thing that, like, it was, that's a broad exactly number of years versus mine was like 2 years apart, something like that.
Staying on first albums, Eric wanted to give a shout out to some fans who don't actually appear to listen, as if that makes any sense. So, non-fan of the show Pete, if you're listening, because if you are, you're going to hear me put the boot in while Eric reminisces about hanging out with what sounds like, well, sounds like carnies. Pete, are you a carny?
Global-eyed, you know, in terms of things. And we're going to come around to that because, in fact, the album we're going to talk about. But I do want to, actually, now that you mentioned U2 and you've previewed it, I don't mind saying this. The one thing I want to mention about both this Rush and U2 were two bands that I started following in that era. And the real reason I did...
See, I love the way you use that word, following, because I'm...
Oh, yeah,
we're of a generation where you followed a band.
Exactly.
It was like a team.
When I was in junior high school, I had a friend, Pete. I'm sure Pete doesn't listen to the Atlantic Voice podcast. He wouldn't know where I live or that it was my podcast. But
put the boot into it. Why not, Pete?
Yeah, Pete,
get your act together.
Pete had an older brother, Les. Now, it was an interesting family. I just... since he's not going to listen, I don't think this would be anything bad. His parents had immigrated from Hungary during the everybody left when the Soviets took over, okay, in like the 70s and sort of took things over there. Maybe in the 60s, whatever it was. They came to America. They owned a car garage, you know, just general repairs to the car place. They lived in a house up on a big hill that used to be, it was originally a schoolhouse, and they had converted into a place to live. They had a German Shepherd that when you'd come up to the house, we pull up in a Volvo, and at that time the Volvo, it was the big tank of a Volvo, so the window sills were high, but the dog would come up and just put his rest his chin in your window as you came in there. Nicest dog in the world. Their grandfather was living with them, and he didn't even speak any English, and he didn't have much to do, so he taught the dog to only take treats from one hand. Like, so if you had it in your right hand, I forget the dog's name, the dog would take the treat from you. If it was in your left hand, he would just sit there waiting and waiting until you put it into your right hand.
I gotta tell you something. That you've just destroyed a whole lot of stereotypes for me for people that repair old cars and have a large dog that guards the car.
He taught me how to shoot BB guns. We used to ride our bikes to the beach, and he would strap a big boom box on the back of his rack of the bicycle.
Really?
And we would ride up to the beach, which was not too far away on a regular basis. Anyway, so his older brother had a Rush album, Moving Pictures, which had already come out by the time I saw it, which was the album that precedes this one. And he had there's something weird in my timeline. He had something about U2, but then the next album I'm going to talk about comes out after this. So in any event, so those were two albums. I said, well, let me check that out. I mean, they couldn't be more different from each other in terms, again, of music styles.
Yeah.
But I think I was somewhat ahead of the curve in like grabbing a band because you had an older brother, which I guess is what happens to most people. They have some older friends who like into something, and then you get into it. Not the way you get into the Bay City Rollers.
No.
Old cars, trained dogs, firing BB guns. What a past my partner seems to have led. All right, time for one more segment before we get to the mashup. We've spent most of this special shouting out some of our fans and non-fans. Well, why are Eric and I fans of? Well, long-time listeners could probably put together a pretty decent list. But what aren't we fans of? Well, FIFA, the world governing body of soccer. That's not surprising considering the corruption and all. ISIS, well, there's no explanation needed there. Florists? Listen on as we link all three together.
The Islamic State. So we're talking about ISIS. ISIS or ISIL, depending upon, you know, who you're...
Depending on who you listen to and your speech impediment.
I mean, says they were banned refereeing soccer.
Yep. I saw it. Yeah.
So what does that actually mean, you think? You know, so apparently, it's partly, I think...
I'm going to take some interesting positions here.
Okay. So apparently what they're banning it for is because referees adhere to FIFA rules instead of Sharia law.
Yes.
Right? So they haven't heavily publicized this, and who knows? I tried to find on Snopes just to see if it turns out we were going to like completely, it'd be some scam article.
No, I didn't think it was.
But I couldn't find anything that said it was a full out scam. So I think it's real. That basically they said, soccer referees, quote, do not judge according to what Allah has revealed. An ISIS court recently ruled, according to Republic, it's a human rights reporting outfit, and apparently the alternative is supposed to be, it's not that you can't play soccer, you just can't have it refereed.
Yes.
So the alternative
is... And you cannot play for a trophy.
That's right.
That was also,
you know, that's so you cannot worldly possessions. I don't know if that means you can't win.
That's going to be important because I'm going to come back to that.
Trophy. You can win or lose. You just can't be playing for an object.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to that, not getting to play for a trophy.
So apparently the alternative, like since, I mean, how are we going to run this game otherwise, is that you could have revenge, basically. Like, you know, the rules are if somebody wrongs you, you're entitled to revenge.
An eye for an eye.
And so you'd have the choice, if you were fouled or something, of exacting a physical revenge or forcing some sort of remuneration or something like that. But I imagine this would slow down the play of the game a little bit,
yeah. Oh, actually, it would mean extra time would last weeks while people went looking for revenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I make a statement about ISIS on this one?
I did like the fact that they were in opposition to FIFA.
I was just about to say, I'm actually with ISIS on all of this for a couple of reasons.
All right.
One, they're against FIFA.
Right.
And anyone who's against FIFA,
we know
the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Any rules have to be better than FIFA rules.
Anything that sticks at the FIFA, I'm for. Also, to be frank with you, you know, being an England fan, I can't remember. We played the last time. We played a meaningful game for a trophy. So really, are ISIS rules really going to be affecting us in any which way?
I was wondering if we were going to have to take, because we are now three games into the Premier, or four games into the Premier League season, depending upon what you listen this to.
And I want to say this too. Watching the number of times people dive around and fake injury and all that kind of stuff, if there's a threat of retribution after the game, it might tidy up certain people who I know are diving in the penalty box.
If you convince the other players that you've been badly injured, the more revenge you can exact.
Yeah, but I would imagine that the ISIS rules for revenge against injustice means that if you're on the other team and you dive and con us out of you get a penalty to win the game, then I'm entitled to show up and burn your house down.
I don't know. I'm going
to
say
that will teach you not to dive the next time we play against each other.
I don't think that's going to work out that way because, you know, ISIS are notorious divers. Yeah, you know, they're always complaining about being put upon and like how poorly they're treated. I hope that none of this podcast is going to get us on what was those lists where they come after you?
Yes. Well, funny that you say
fatwa,
that.
Isn't it?
Funny that you say that, because there was an article this week that I read in a paper that apparently...
Do you need a bell, or is this part of the same topic?
This is part of the same topic. Okay. That there was a florist in England who... And I didn't bring the article,
I have the Sun version, which I don't know if that means it's accurate or not.
Basically, the florist had posed for some publicity shots for either his own florist or the chain for which he
even
worked.
Even Leyland or Leland.
There you go. We won't tweet him out because I want to keep as many steps between us and him. Yeah. Anyway, apparently ISIS used the photo in propaganda and basically said, and I know you're going to have an accurate quote, but basically said, here's a picture of the kind of dudes that we need to be wiping out. Basically, you know, regular working class Joes, these are your victims. And the poor guy was like, oh, I ended up in ISIS propaganda.
According to the Sun's headline, blooming scary.
Yeah.
Flourish shock at appearing in ISIS magazine. So it's not just like a whole publication. Magazine encouraged jihadists to target, quote, merry crusader citizens selling flowers.
Yes.
So
and
use his picture.
We've talked about car dealers earlier and me getting fleeced. Flowers are one of those things that when I go in there and buy them, I'm paying whatever they tell me because I don't know what the value of the flower is.
Yeah.
And so how do I know that I'm not being gouged by florists? So again,
I ordered, worse than that. I mean, is ordering the flowers online or a phone call.
Exactly.
Like you're sending somebody else. How much do you want to spend?
$50.
Well, don't you want to spend $80? I'm like, I have no, it's like, you always have to ask the person who got it. I said, did it look like it was worth
$80? Now, that's not necessarily meaning I'm going to be aligning with ISIS on this whole florist thing.
No,
but if I had my way, I'd be putting you in there with car dealers as people who might be gouging me. So florists... I'm with you against ISIS, but you know something in general, I'm a bit concerned about the value of your product and what really is the value.
You know, this guy's quote, this ties it all together. I'm not scared, but I am concerned that the photo is in this magazine. I don't know any jihadis. My customers are the elderly edge crowd, footballers' wives, and those sorts of people. So this is a fancy florist.
Yeah, exactly.
Who are the footballers' wives buying flowers for? Aren't they supposed to get the flowers bought for them? Maybe they just buy flowers for themselves because their husbands are bad.
Probably for their third party lover, I would imagine, when you're all not working and doing whatever. Yeah. I do want to say this. There is a lesson to be had here for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just take stock photos from the internet. And I know because on the blog, I've sometimes done that and I feel guilty when I do. Apparently, you should only ever use photographs from a free source. And then you should properly...
Well, that would be...
You should probably acknowledge WikiComments.
Yeah, there's a lot of free stuff.
But now and again, when I've not found a good one, I've just searched for someone and stolen the photo. Yeah.
Well, have we incorporated this so if we get sued, we'll be all right?
I don't know, but we can talk about that after the show. So anyway, that's ISIS versus FIFA and florists.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting thing. It's interesting to put florists and FIFA on the same side. And I'm sure there are plenty of florists that are upset with the way that FIFA has ruined their game. So
it's fun to say FIFA florist.
FIFA florist. So there you go. That's that one. All right. We're getting towards the end of this year's show, which means it's time for the mashup. That's the traditional audio montage of all the little bits, singing, voices, gibberish, one-liners. But before this year's montage, well, we have just a spare moment for me to take my obligatory shot at musician Sting. Long-time listeners will know I'm no fan of he, and so how can I ever pass up any opportunity to put the boot in?
they would jump the shark if they didn't change. This is the other thing that's interesting about bands, right? Can you name a band that changes anymore? Like, maybe they're just not around long enough to change. But like that really is transitioning in their sound question, that you could look at the beginning and their ending and be like, gosh, it's like completely different.
They don't
and with
get,
each album, they're coming out with a different sound.
The business doesn't allow them.
Yeah.
And if they change, they suck. That's my. We can't do a music show.
The fact that these bands could transition in a way that would alienate old fans and yet pick up new fans. I mean, that is bold artistic maneuvering that nobody would be allowed to do anymore. Like the idea that you would, you know, if you're Adele, you're going to move on to a different sound. Nobody's going to let you move on to a different sound.
No, and I was going to say, you know, we can't do a music show without me putting a boot into Sting. So I'm just going to put the boot into Sting for constantly changing and doing whatever. I've been thinking about this line for about 6 months, and we now have a music show. I can say it. For me, Sting is the musical equivalent of a theme restaurant. It's all a knockoff of everything else and not as good as the original. And he is one artist who was great and now sucks. Because the police are still brilliant. I just needed the segue in to put the boot into Sting.
All right, enough self-indulgent. Let's get the bell ready. It's this year's mashup, and let's get started in what might be a familiar place, a galaxy far, far away.
Let me just prefatory note of plot-wise where it fits is...
It is before those first three movies that were great, but it's after those other three movies that sucked, and therefore all before the very last movie that was great. Right. Copyright Atlantic Voice.
Well, the copyright's getting more and more complicated. It's literally immediately before.
I'm still amazed I could
immediately
pull that off. But like I say, we're not doing completely summer movies. We are doing a few other current topics.
Yeah. So like Cubbies, huh? Right?
Yes, the World Series.
Yeah, the World Series. Cubs won.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Cubs win.
Can I tell a quick story?
That's imitation of Will Ferrell imitating Harry Carey.
Okay.
Because I haven't really listened to a lot of Harry Carey. Harry Carey was the...
Didn't he have a voice like that? Okay. But deeper and older.
Yeah, like, but the Will Ferrell...
Cubs fans!
Will Ferrell used to do be like, Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, that's what
you
know, it is.
And then so it's crazy differential.
To quote a random 80s pop band, they're big in Japan. Big in Japan. If you know who that is, please tell me.
Right above it in the...
But there are a lot of people who won't go, oh, I don't do space movies.
Yeah.
And then they won't go.
Next, and I think this one is actually more debatable. Will he withdraw from NAFTA? So not NAFTA for people that know.
Oh, sorry. Really, like, no, I'm coming strong.
Yeah. Well, do you know what it is?
Yeah. It's not one of the things I didn't. Just because I'm a foreign
all right, just check in. What does it stand for?
Starring Idris Elba. And the
it's got
villain,
Matthew McConaughey in it.
All right. I've been desperately trying to practice that.
Yeah, so mostly it's because the dentist is having a new deck put on their house and they have to pay in installments. So if they can stretch your payments out concurrently, it lines up very nicely with the amounts they have to pay their contractor.
And you know something? If the guy needs more cash, what better thing to do than get in some English guy?
Like, ooh, I got a cash cow. You know, he goes to his buddy, goes, I think we may be putting that outdoor heating system just now.
You get a
hot tub. It's going to be a hot tub.
You get a British guy in? Yeah. Oh, they're all, you can mine them for all kinds of cash.
Literally.
That's my bad American accent.
Yeah.
And I said, what is this? And he said, oh, it's Fat Boy Slim on the floor of the boutique. God, who he talks about.
Stellan Skarsgård does he is not frenzied at all. He's like totally stoic, just sitting in there, and he puts his seatbelt later on, too.
Yeah, he's in the back. And Jonathan Pryce is in the front doing an Irish accent with a gun going, drive this way. And the very last line of the movie, they're all doing different things to try and get it. And then you hear Michael Caine, because there's a chance for a Michael Caine impression, hold on, lads, I've got an idea. And then the film stops. And you just see the bus hanging. And it is in The Road Warrior, which is the second Mad Max movie. He's still driving that car. And the fella goes, last of the V8 Interceptors.
The song goes? You don't remember how every rose has its thorn?
That actually sounds for a brief moment like something I would listen to.
Every night has its dawn.
But you're making it sound like it's
every cowboy seems the same sad song.
You've just done that without the lyrics in front of you, and I can't decide if that's disturbing or not. You know,
apparently the Olympic Village had no coffee,
And somebody said that the reason was a Coca-Cola sponsorship, that Coca-Cola like had the like corner on caffeine and they wouldn't allow other types of caffeine to be in the village. Now, I find that hard to believe.
In like, Brazil, of all places. Was it Frank Sinatra saying, they've got a lot of coffee in Brazil?
I don't know.
That's a Frank Sinatra song.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I think he did
Going straight into next year's highlights, though.
He did it better than that, dear old Frank. Yeah, on this show over the years. What's
the name of this album?
This
have you said yet?
This is Big Audio Dynamite.
This is big.
So it was that.
What's the one that has that? Woo, bless you. Woo, bless you.
That's Big Audio Dynamite too.
Okay.
See, Mick Jones fell out with everyone in Big Audio Dynamite the same way he fell out with everyone in The Clash. The aforementioned J.J. Abrahams is one of the executive producers. But in 1977, because it was her Silver Jubilee and she was busy touring the country and celebrating herself for having been in power for 25 years.
It was a Jubilee of power or birthday?
It was Silver Jubilee, so it was 25 years as queen.
Okay.
So she was so it wasn't happy birthday to me. It was I'm in charge for a quarter of a century.
Wasn't her birthday just like last year or the year before?
Well, she has a birthday every year.
No.
Everyone's got a birthday every year.
That's true. Good point. Fair enough. You got me on that one.
I'm going to challenge those assertions. I do have a question for you before I do that.
Challenge? I'm right.
Like I said earlier at the start of the show, I printed up the page for Sir Tim Berners-Lee because it was four pages double-sided. The internet and World Wide Web entries ran like 25 pages. And I'm like, that's too much for me. Someone needs to invent a pricey internet where every entry gives you...
This is the second time you've used that word in the last couple of episodes, what it is.
Pricey is the shortened version. What did you do for all your years of going doing double masters and doctorates and you don't know how to pricey something? Pricey is when you take a whole page and boil its essence down to two sentences. So that is the act of pricey-ing something.
Is that a word or is that an acronym?
No, it's a word. P-R-E-C-I-S. I think it comes from the French, precise. Process.
Yeah, we don't use that in America. Pricey. Maybe summarize.
Well, pricey is the academic version of summarizing. That's what I'm going to tell you. If you really know what you're doing, you pricey things. I don't know how many people are letting from some of these countries right now. Anyway,
I'm
saying is he's going to make a hoo-ha out of the fact that it's and that's what I'm saying.
I assume he's going to make a hoo-ha. Let's see.
Okay,
he's going to make a hoo-ha. Hoo-ha is determined.
We're going to Wembley. Like the teams all have songs. Every team has different songs that reference we're going to Wembley. Because going to Wembley means something.
And they would say Wembley.
Wembley, yeah. We're the famous Arsenal and we're going to Wembley. Sorry. He and Putin like to paint themselves as birds of a feather.
Do you say feather?
Feather, yeah. Yeah,
isn't that feather?
Yeah, it is feather. Yeah, okay. But I've always had the problem coming from North London. I don't know if it's prepared back at house or not.
And I wouldn't know the difference between a red lentil and a non-red lentil, except for maybe it would be red.
Wicks, he had a famous line, you know, if the dog is there and getting overly involved, he had this famous line, get down, Shep, get down, Shep. And it became like a thing where, you know, when you'd watch TV comedians, they would do a John Noakes impression.
Yeah.
And you knew it was John Noakes because they would do their version of get down, Shep, get down, Shep. Anyway,
it's almost it's like a music thing. Get down, Shep.
You have a 1 in 63 chance of dying from the flu. Maybe my nose actually could be wrong now. That doesn't make any sense.
I mean, it's clearly not a year. I mean...
Over your life? I don't know.
But 1 in 63 people die from the flu ever?
I don't know, but the numbers don't lie.
Well, they do lie, apparently. They may not lie, but they may be stupid.
This black and white Eddie Bauer hat seems to be caught in this weird sort of, you know...
Well, it's just a winter hat,
demilitarized zone of it's neither Christmas, but if you wore that in the snow in March, I guarantee someone would go, oh, you're still wearing your Christmas hat.
So this way, like if you're trying to take your bottle of wine somewhere and you don't want to deal with glass, you can just throw it in there.
I wonder what Mr. Keith would have to sing about this little invention.
I think he might like that. It's like box wine
kind of thing. My beer looks like
a Starbucks cup. I have poured us...
Song about you're my buddy, our friendship means everything. We do them back to back, and so my partner and I have like a 5-hour orgy of podcasting.
Let's not call it an orgy, please.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I liked it. And so let me say this. Those Star Wars, those Thirsty movies were great. Those RC movies sucked. The one after that was great. And the one that has nothing to do with any of them, I really enjoyed. Copyright Atlantic Voice.
With deliberate symmetry, there is your mashup for the past year. Now, before the next mashup rolls around, fates be willing, we'll have reached something of a milestone. This September marks our 5th year on the internet airwaves. Yes, 5 years of the Atlantic Voice. That's over 150 episodes, more than 200 hours of two men jabbering. Anyway, to celebrate, we're going to be doing a live show in front of an audience for the very first time. So if you're a long-time listener and already a fan, if you're thinking of becoming a fan, if you want to meet other fans, or find out exactly why our fans have so much time on their hands to be, well, fans of this show, email us at atlanticvoice@gmail.com and we'll keep you informed as to precisely when and exactly where. Now, the details aren't set in stone yet, which is why we need you, our fans, to help us out. So before our last clip, where I implore our law enforcement fans to do their thing, there's just time on behalf of my absentee partner Eric and myself to say thank you for listening to another year of the Atlantic Voice. We do this show for us, for sure, but we do it for all you, our fans. All right, law enforcement, get to work.
So, I wanted to another follower of the show recently who will be adding, but we don't have a job for him. Just like we have Detective Mike helps out with things, Improvised Explosive Dave, and we have a CSI Dan who is in charge of crime scene investigations for one of the local police forces.
We have a lot of friends in law enforcement, which I guess is some sort of badge of honor for us.
I dig it.
I'm not quite sure what there is about this podcast that makes it a fascination to law enforcement. Yeah. But again, you know, if we get into trouble with the president, then we might need law enforcement.
Yeah, right.
Or law enforcement might be the ones coming to take us away.
Yeah.
That's as political as we're going to get on this show.
But we'll have to find some things for them to do for us, because we did have Detective Mike look up some things.
Here's what they should do if they're all detectives, is they need to get out there and figure out the best way for us to do the 5th anniversary special.
That's not really detecting.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You know something, they'll tell you, it's not all just murders and stuff. Sometimes it's grunt work.
I think,
and this is grunt work.
If you had to, generalize...
Have you ever seen Starsky
and
Hutch?
They would be investigating things that have happened.
Have you ever seen Starsky and Hutch?
Not, like, places to have your...
Who's the boss on Starsky and Hutch who's always yelling at them? I'm that guy
Huggy Bear?
Now. I don't care. Huggy Bear? Go out there and find something for the 5th anniversary special.
Yeah.
Stop driving around in that car. Let's put yourself to work.
All right.
So there you go. Law enforcement fans of the show. Is there anything else for this week?
I don't think so.
I think we've come to the end. This has been the Atlantic Voice. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice podcast. Follow us on Twitter @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at atlanticvoice.net. Email us at atlanticvoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.